I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
On Thursday, January 19th, 2006, William Gibson wrote in his blog, "I guess this is the literary equivalent of phantom limb syndrome, but now that I'm pretty much convinced that J.T. Leroy never existed, I catch myself regretting never having met him. I think that might mean he was America's first Idaru in the fullest Japanese sense." And those of you unfamiliar with Idaru, it's the idea of a virtual idol. And you'll all be virtually meeting Laura Albert, a.k.a. J.T. Leroy, later today on the Are You Serious show. But first, speaking of Schrodinger's cat, I have to tell you that a few weeks back on the weekend edition of the Are You Serious, I said that our former guest, philosopher Richard Rorty, was deceased. I did get that wrong. Mr. Rorty is seriously ill, but he is still very much alive, and we wish him a recovery.
Sorry about that, Richard.
And
now that glad. You can apologize for.
Yeah, we're glad.
What the heck? We do have our usual gang with us today: Jeff Deal, Steve Robles, and Diana Brown. And what we're going to do is we're going to play a clip from a show a few weeks back, and then we're going to talk about it. People in that business are incredibly fucking thin-skinned.
Oh, yeah.
Much more so than, like, rock stars or actresses and all that. So what kind of levels of outrage have you run into or prickliness?
It's usually just really uncomfortable conversations at parties, which I'm learning. It's a great art of diffusing conversations. I never had that before. It was great. I was usually too passive-aggressive to actually have someone confront me at a party. But now I'm able to, at least make someone like me for a half hour, and that's all I really need. But we've only gotten one legal threat so far. Well, a couple of minor ones, but like we're still waiting for a good, solid, cease and desist and a good lawsuit. Yeah. We're really trying to get News Corp to sue us.
Okay, so there's an awful lot for us to unravel here.
Oh, my.
Isn't there? Because here is Nick Douglas saying that he'd like to get sued. And there's Jeff Deal holding in a little piece of information about something that's happening in his own world at the same time that he will soon be suing a griefer with the EFF. And then there's the rumor that Nick Douglas might have been let go because of the interview that he gave right here on the Are You Serious show.
So, well, isn't there actual evidence that that might be the case?
There's
some makes
evidence.
It a little bit more of a than a rumor.
It was definitely cited as,
the guy that fired him actually used that transcript.
Yeah, but I think it's questionable because he was obviously thinking about leaving. I mean, there were rumors.
There were other.
It makes you wonder. Like, is this all just a fabulous creation? Would you go ahead and sing a little more of that? Are you? Because it's quite beautiful.
Yeah. Well, there's some. I mean, Nick Douglas is a very savvy kid.
Definitely.
He knows how the blogs work, and he knows a little bit about publicity. He's learning more. He's very young, so he's still learning, but he's pretty smart. And so he knew that if he were going to leave Gawker, that having a lot of publicity around that would help him in getting his next gig. So there's, there's some question as to how much
ultimate goal, getting fired is always way sexier than just leaving.
But at the same time, on the other hand, what he got fired for, ostensibly, is a pretty serious thing for any corporation to consider when hiring someone. If they're gonna increase the likelihood that you could lose a court case or something,
you can't get sued
lightly.
For saying you'd like to get sued.
No, but there's something about, and I've heard lawyers tell me this about this very case.
Right.
I asked my EFF lawyers, in fact, and they said yes. Well, it does actually create a certain when you go to court, it goes to intention. If you have been recklessly saying, "Hey, sue us," it shows that you have a certain disregard for the truth, perhaps.
And if your job is to be irreverent and
no, there's that. There's that. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I love that. Like it is.
I mean, look, Gawker's.
He didn't say I'm trying to get them sued. He said we're trying to get sued. So it's a totally different intention.
He does implicate the entire.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you make a good point. I mean, you look at Gawker's other big site, Defamer. I mean, that's got defamation.
I think it's a lame excuse. I mean, I think he was doing his job, which is to be,
I like
irreverent,
the very guy who fed him tips at his old job, then ended up hiring him on instant message, and then is the one that has to fire him for doing his job. And he talked about how he got the job by totally slamming Gawker in his other position.
Keep in mind, too, I was at the Laughing Squid party last night, and I saw Nick Douglas, and I talked to him.
And
he told me I had to leave, but he told me...
He told you that you had to leave.
Right. He chased
me
out of there.
He only needs 30 minutes of liking from any individual. That's all he needs.
No, he told me that Nick Denton, his former boss, was... Right. Going to show up at that party any minute, and that Denton had actually called him and to make sure it was okay, and that they were going to talk, and he was looking forward to talking to Denton and hanging out and showing everybody that actually they are still friends and all that stuff. So there is still even there some question about just how much of this is theater and how much of it is.
Yeah, they have the same initials,
Whether it's theater.
Are you making some sort of illusion here?
Yeah, I think they came up.
Have they been seen in the same place? Show up?
I think they came up with this in a room somewhere while listening to Neil Diamond.
We're here with Laura Albert, a.k.a. J.T. Leroy. As J.T. Leroy, she wrote several inspired books, including Sarah, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, and Harold's End, and she wrote the original screenplay for Gus Van Sant's Elephant. And she did a whole bunch of other stuff, including mixing up with a who's who of hipster celebrities, ranging from Lou Reed to Nancy Sinatra, from Tobias Wolff to Courtney Love. And welcome, Laura. Thanks for joining us.
It's really good to see you again.
It's good to see you. Yeah, thanks for inviting us to several parties, including a party for an interview on the Paris Review. And it was a wonderful time. It was very nice to see you surrounded by a lot of people who love you and care about you, and perhaps a different image that what some people might have from a distance. Talk a little bit about being on included in the Paris Review, which is excellent interview.
Yeah, thank you. I the people who have read it, I've heard such great feedback from, and it was just feeling like that the proper medium would come, and I turned down Rolling Stone, I turned down Vanity Fair, and it wasn't, I was honored, right. But I just felt like when Paris Review came, it was just kind of like, they're a literary magazine, and I'm a writer.
Yeah.
End of the day, what I was interested in were people who take problems of spirit, problems of the soul, and transform them to problems of craft. You don't see, we weren't hanging out with Paris Hilton, I don't know her, I can't speak to her, but I'm interested
in... hell of a writer, though.
Right, that's why you don't see pictures of us hanging with Paris, It's all those novels she wrote, So for me, the Paris Review, it was just, when you do an interview with someone, you're reading somebody's interpretation. It's really It's they're putting their projections onto you. It's going to be she sits there and she is reflecting on boogers in the nose. Whatever the hell, it's their take. And this was just a Q&A. Right. And it was just, and it was the senior editor who came out. He was wonderful. We all, my friends became friends with his friends. It was a really big, it was like family. And I think it was because, you know, the whole articulation was just so different than, I mean, people who know me, nobody who knows me has said anything. They haven't spoke. They don't need their 3 minutes of fame to say, oh, this is who she is or who she isn't. Right. So
it's funny. I mean, you mentioned turning down Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair, and I mean, Paris Review in the literary world is it.
Huge thing. I always felt like I would never. I remember my friend was talking to me, this wonderful writer who's a real mentor to me, how she felt kind of snubbed by them, and you know, Plimpton when he was around. And I remember just thinking, man, if they're doing this to you, they will never mention my name. You know, forget it. It's just, it wasn't going to happen. And to be on the cover was just like, it's pretty amazing. It was just a pretty amazing thing.
Well, I think it's a sign of respect for your work. And
well, you know, it's kind of like, what's really funny is you can have these people talking smack about it. But, you know, well, this and that, the fact that it's the Paris Review, it's just like, well, she's this and that, but at Harvard, blah, 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 but at Harvard. You know, I mean, there's a way that because it's the Paris Review, if there wasn't some value to my work, which, you know, that's the thing that has been like, it's just like.
Right, that's true. If you get the cover of Vanity Fair, it's questionable. It could all be
gossip. Well, you mean you got nice tits, or you're, you know, you're.
That's why I've never been on the cover.
Wait, no, I have nice tits. I could do that. Mm. No, it's you know, well, your teeth have been done well. No, your plastic surgeon's right. Or maybe you did your plastic surgeon really well.
That would be the case. Anyway, I was mentioning earlier. I did do my plastic surgeon several times.
But you did your plastic surgeon.
Did me no good.
Maybe, there's a lesson in there. Are you?
Did you use the knee pads?
That's the problem.
Said,
well. Exactly.
No, exactly, Steve.
Not sloppy seconds, no.
So I started to mention earlier, before the show, that Timothy Leary recorded an album and a song titled You Can Be Anybody That You Want to Be This Time Around. And it seems like we ought to live in a culture where people can try on different personas pretty easily. And wasn't that the point of virtual reality?
Well, I'm amazed at how, you know, everyone's, it's like the question is, why? Why did you do it? And it's funny, a friend of mine who says, you know, people have said you did it for the celebrity. It's like, what? You did it for, you know, the money. What money? But he said, I know why you did it. He said, you did it for the food. I said, yes, yes. That's true. I did it for the fucking food.
So what kind of food did you wind up bumping into? Does J.T. Leroy get different food than Laura?
For, if we live till 84, all we'll ever get is gruel. Oh, every day we say a prayer, will it change the bill of fare? Still we get the same old gruel. You know? There's not a crust, not a crumb. Can we find, can we beg, can we borrow our catch? But there's nothing to stop us from getting a thrill. When we all close our eyes and imagine food, glorious food. I'll stop. Sausage and mustard.
That's
right. Ma, we're in the mood. Cold jelly and custard. Yes.
You sing far better than I. But I do love that phenomenal segment from Oliver.
Yeah.
Yay. Applause to that. Yeah. And certainly was parodied beautifully by Pink Floyd. But food. Let's go back to food.
Yeah, that was it for me. You know, it's like when we were going around the world and everything, it's like there's that celebrity. And I'm like, and where's the hors d'oeuvres?
Where's the food, yeah.
You know, because I was awarded the state. I was in a group home and we would get these. My friend, I was just talking to one of the girls from the group home, and she knows that they're called the Type 10 cans or something like that, and you know, where they'd come in with the peanut butter and with
like the number 10 S.E. Rykoff industrial
size. That's it, right? That's it, you know. And so I mean, I'm always amazed when you go to these events and, you know, like I used to write for 7x7 and
wine and cheese.
Well, these women don't eat. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say, I don't know. Well, I'm very familiar with people who do the white powder diet. You know, not saying anything about 7x7. I know those women don't do those things at all. But it's the iced tea and the salad kind of scene.
The society x-rays in the front row of the fashion shows, as they used to be called.
Well, also on the lower scale of literature, and the joke when I was in the English department at a certain university, we had a blues song, I was raised on wine and cheese. And that was all you ever got, wine, cheese, and crackers.
What? No. We were at this one party, I can't remember the hotel, and we situated ourselves with a shopping bag by the kitchen. And it was hot because the wait people were running from us. They were running, and it was like, come on back here, baby.
You're all seducing the wait staff to get the canapes.
No.
Not literally seducing, but
if it came to that,
come as it looks.
If it came, I know who's got the power. It's like, celebrities? No, I want the waiter.
But did Savannah get some food that should have gone to you, or?
You know, in the beginning, it was like, okay.
I guess maybe we should explain Savannah, or people can just look it up.
Yeah, they can just look it up. They can read some tea leaves, and they can make it up.
They can make up a new story.
Yeah, they seem to already.
But do tell, yes. How did Savannah get? What did she get to enjoy?
Oh, we had
some fine foods.
We both really enjoyed eating. And, you know, I mean, that's why I was grateful it wasn't me, because now when it's me and I make an appearance, it's like now, I mean, in our society, the worst thing you can be, people would rather be, would rather lose a limb than be obese. It's the idea of, you know, I mean, the way we equate somebody who's overweight with being fat and stupid. I mean, overweight. They're fat and stupid are the labels that
or jolly.
Along. Jolly. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it is
like the last front that we're allowed to make fun of, I think.
People are to overweight people the way they are.
A round girl myself.
Actually, you brought some music with us, and let's take a break and listen to something. Anything particularly that we should hear?
Well, let's see. When I was in New York, and I was a punk, I loved the Avengers.
Yeah.
And the Avengers, there were very few female singers that in the punk world, you were allowed to be, if you were a boy, or I didn't understand why you could be, if you were a girl, it was okay. If you were the girlfriend, or if you were, made yourself useful, you know.
Costumes for the band.
Yeah, so costumes. It was the same, it was replicating what mainstream rock and roll was. It just didn't seem like it was supposed to be the promise of the different.
Right.
And that she was doing this, and you know, she was they opened for the Sex Pistols, and it were these two songs that were just amazing to me, and I just sang them all the time. So to be able to record them, I recorded them with Jerry Harrison.
Right. And formerly the Talking Heads.
Yeah, so. And that was really amazing. I'll tell you one funny story. We were there with the original, one of the producers who had worked on it, and he had done the Angry Samoans, the band I loved, and everything. Yeah. And we were there at this table at this really nice restaurant there in Sausalito, and we're sitting around the table, and you know, they had complimented me, which was really nice, you know, about my voice and everything, and they said, oh, because we had recorded some original stuff too, and then they complimented me about, you know, some lyrics I had added, and I said, well, I actually wrote all the lyrics, and also I wrote the books, and you know, I wrote all the JT stuff and everything. And there was this moment of silence, and then everybody just burst out laughing. You know, and I was just like, I constantly, because I would always tell people, you know, I'd always tell people, well, you know, I wrote the books, you know, and the reaction was always like, it was this like, Prince and the Pauper thing, I realized, you know, no one is ever going to believe me. Because most of the thing, people would call up JT and say, you know, you got to watch your back. Because that speedy chick is just like, she's mega maniacal.
Talking about you all the time.
Well, yeah, she's trying to take credit for your work. So.
Let's hear the tunes and come right back. So, yeah, you were talking about the punk scene, and actually we had Steve Blush on the show with, I think, the director of American Hardcore.
And was he here?
About a month ago.
Do you still have his contact info?
Yeah, I do. I have his email.
You know, he has my fucking collection of
listen,
hardcore.
She has his...
We should call him. Can you do like phone calls and shit?
No, we can't do it. We're not set for that. But then when we get to the point where we are,
you'll have to come back.
We will be happy to do that.
He has my collection of hardcore flyers that he never returned to me. I mean, and not only that, he put them in his book, American Hardcore. If you look at it, it said, you know, Laura Albert and everything on them. Right. He took credit for one of them that's mine, which is the Minor Threat song list, which is, you know, I sound like one of those, like, my son plays the Yu-Gi-Oh card fetishist or something, you know, but he has my Minor Threat song list, and he said it was from his collection. It's like, fuck you, I'll kick your ass for that one.
All right, well, we're going to go. We're going to have to
right here.
We're going to have this one out.
Well, you know, I mean, I want my posters back. I mailed them. Like, all I was obsessive with my hardcore flyers. I mean, it was my life.
The role of women in that scene was, in the book and particularly in the movie, it was real weird, actually.
Definitely.
But I mean, but like New York punk, there were quite a few women involved in. In that,
it seemed
in
more
mid,
so in
the
New
mid
York
70s.
In
Deborah Harry
LA.
And people in Talking Heads and so forth.
Yeah,
that's weird that the hardcore punk had more of this macho thing going on, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was more the new wave, and it was still, you know, because the girls were prettier, and it was very different, and there was this whole straight edge thing going on. I spoke to Steve Blush about this. I mean, it was kind of funny because I couldn't understand in the whole straight edge thing, which was, you know, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't
right.
fuck. And I really loved that idea because it was just, I found that it was really sad, all the drugs that were going on in the hardcore scene,
major
the punk
speed.
Scene. Yeah, just people were, I mean, most everyone came from a really horrible background, and
right.
it just wasn't making anything better. So here came this movement that made it cool to not use, but I found that the background of that, there was a backstory of it being very misogynistic, and one of the heads of that, it turned out, sure enough, he there really was rage at women, and I met a guy who told me that he was this guy's lover, and the guy was not out, it was closeted, but it was very, the message was very there. I mean, there are all these, you know, DC kids where if they fucked, if they engaged with a woman, they would shave their heads out of punishment, and it was this boys club, and I couldn't figure it out. Once again, it was just like, shit, you know, here's something where you think, well, it's an opportunity to be a participant and an equal, mm. and the doors are shut on you.
And you find something to relate to, and it turns out to...
You don't got the genitals for it. Nope, I'm sorry.
I don't think I had the genitals for it, actually. I mean, I was in what I thought was a hardcore band in Rochester in the early 80s. And
the problem was Rochester. I don't know if it was your lack of rocks or your preponderance of rocks.
If I'd known what was going on in hardcore.
I don't know if I want to know.
If I'd known what was going on in hardcore in some
You're
of the other cities,
there.
I would have turned into a folk singer immediately, actually.
I could picture you kind of like doing sort of an Ali G, sort of like with a kumbaya, you know, little banjo going. My mama took me. Yeah, that was the start of all my problems. You know, I used to go to Pete Seeger when I was a kid. And
did you really?
Yeah, down by the...
kumbaya.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the protest stuff. It was definitely early punk. So let's talk about food.
All right,
my birthday,
so,
you were there.
Well,
my
I started
birthday
asking
party.
You.
You
I started asking you about Savannah, and whether she got your food. So
yeah, did she get the coconut shrimp, and you had to do the lavash rolls? I mean, how did that hierarchy
talk
break
about
down?
Food and friendship?
Food. Well, no, I mean we're both ladies who lunch, so it was but the funny thing is very often they would ask her, do you want this? You know, are you thirsty? And you know, the way in the group home, the way it worked is like if someone offered you something, well, maybe you don't want it, but somebody else does. I mean, everything, you're constantly...
You always accept that.
Right. And you know, well, maybe I don't want it, but maybe someone else does. You never say no. You know, you're always open because everything is of use. And you've got a big family that you've got to provide for. And... You know, I mean, sometimes it takes other people training when they're not used to thinking like that, that, you know, if you're standing there and they're offering it to you and you think for yourself, well, no, I'm not thirsty. Well, is this person thirsty? Is that, you know, it was just a little bit of a mindset.
So the idea of sharing food.
No, I'm not talking about food. I mean, no, that I think was... very. I would probably bite it out of somebody's hand. Probably have. No, actually, even my first oral sex experience was with whipped cream. You know, I mean, it was like I wasn't going to put that thing in my mouth without a healthy dosing of whipped cream. And this is scary, you know.
It looks better in whipped cream, also, I think.
Do you find that you can take little cotton balls too and just kind of approximate it too? You might not get a girl. I think the only one you might get is a dental hygienist. You might get turned on by that.
Don't even talk to me about the dental hygienist.
Could you just spit? Are you?
What? Yeah. Well, I'm trying to make positive association. I'm doing it for you.
You're reframing my negative experiences, I think.
Yeah, so just when next time you see them coming at you with the cotton ball, you won't think Novocaine shot. You won't think, is it safe? Is it safe? You know, Marathon Man, you'll think oral sex. See? I've opened your horizons.
Oh no! Now Aryu's going to be booking these constant appointments with his hygienist.
On this show, we're only allowed to think about anal sex. I think we established that.
I didn't get the memo
with our previous guest, but
was he talking about anal sex?
He did invoke the act of anal sex there. Aryu.
Yay, anal! I think was a theme.
It was a theme because it just kept coming up in an earlier program,
so to speak.
Oh,
but. Do we have a tight-ass culture, do you think?
Speaking of anal sex, I think that was a segue.
I don't know. I'm from New York, and then I moved to San Francisco, so I'm not the person to ask.
The cursed earth, as they call it in the Judge Dredd comics, is not really part of your experiential level.
Yeah.
You didn't do Mid-America.
No, I can't. I did do phone sex, and, I mean, I spoke to so many people who would get... deodorant bottles stuck up inside them.
Really?
Sure, yeah, it's a hospital thing. They always, you know, they got people with light bulbs up there and so forth.
Yeah, hot light bulbs, that's the thing. They put them in, they grease them up, they're warm. But for me, it's not edible, so I'm really not that interested.
You have a menu here.
I have a menu here. Well, you guys came to my birthday. Did you try the vegan cake?
We got there sort of late. I had something very sweet, actually.
We had lemon bars. We didn't have the vegan cake.
Yeah.
But I remember the dog had a little bit of a opus with the cake and the potato chips. But was that the vegan cake? It was very beautiful.
I'm really into well, you know, it's funny. I went to Deadwood, South Dakota. And because I work on the HBO show Deadwood, and my son's on the show, and I spent all last year there, and it was pretty amazing. And so we went to Deadwood, South Dakota to actually see, and they brought us there, and it was some of the cast members were there. They have bands, and they played this Wild Bill Hickok Day. And what was amazing to me was it really brought back how graced we are in San Francisco with the food, the quality of food there. It was all Sysco food products, you know, straight off the van. And it, no matter what they were trying to do, they're working with the same product, and you can just scrape off the pesticides with a knife. And I mean, it really, the level of obesity there, it's the idea of quantity over quality. And there was one woman there it's this place called the Corn Exchange in Rapid City, and she was really, really trying. And the people get so upset when they come there and they don't have like massive mounds of food, which it's just like it's filler. Do you know, like the casino culture?
Right. When you go into a restaurant in Mid-America and so forth, right? There has to be.
Definitely the home of like those. King George buffets and things like that, where the food is just sort of stuff, and it's all kind of the same, and it's just filler, and you pay $7.95 and you can just keep loading up your plate till you want to die.
Well,
on the other hand, I've been to some restaurants that are very upscale, and they give you so little food that...
That is the other extreme.
And as a Jew, doesn't that just kill you? I mean, as a New York Jew, it's just like, what?
I guess
it's... Hello?
It's so horrible in such small portions kind of situation.
Right. No, that's why it's good to eat for free.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I do I mentioned earlier, I do murder mysteries, and one of the lessons is, like, never take an actor's food. And one of my friends came to join the company, and she came to watch a rehearsal, and she started, like, taking the other actor's food. Are you going to eat that? And it was just, she was forever, she could never come back.
Oh, right.
You just
don't take
actor's food or musician's food or...
Yeah, you know, you don't, I mean, my book, Sarah, is filled with, you know, I mean, it's just all about the food. I mean, you know, there's like transgendered and, you know, there's sex and all that other kinds of stuff in there too. But
right.
I mean, to me, it was it's like an ideal world, you know, where people, I mean, if you took an actual transgendered truck stop and made, and that was the place, it wouldn't exist. It would, you know, people would, especially borderline South, it just wouldn't be allowed. So, you know, it created a place where it was my kind of subconscious. I wouldn't say it was my fantasy, but where just this magical world where people can exist and this magic could exist, the food, people of different genders and different sexuality, and they instead of being murdered, that they actually were aspired to. So
made something possible. In a way, I guess it sounds sort of like a Barrosian world, but not really. It's much more earthy, I guess.
In your Paris Review article, I remember they asked about stories and your protagonists, and you mentioned Peter Pan. And so, talking about food, it makes me think of the scene where the Lost Boys envision any kind of food that they want to eat, and it can just magically appear before them. Do you think that might have been some influence from?
Oh, I didn't even remember that part. And there, I think that so many people, this is such a rich culture. One thing that, not a rich culture, but I mean, so many of the people we got exposed to, it was a very different world from like the group home. You know, I was always amazed when we'd go into people's houses that were fabulously wealthy and their refrigerator was just like, Sam's Club. Like
right.
To me, it's like, if you have enough money for all this, like to be able to go into some place like Whole Foods and not sweat it.
Yeah. As opposed to, you know, the rest of us who, like, I can't pay $25 for a salad.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that to me was just like, to me, it's like writing. I mean, one thing I did early on was I found a way to, it's like a barter, you know. I mean, I know so many people who barter in this city of all kinds of goods. And, you know, to me, it was being able to, I used to do, I used to, you know, for the web magazine, like you did, right?
Many, many years back. Yeah. What was the name that you used for?
Laura Victoria.
That's right.
But I did the sex column.
Yeah.
And
did they pay you in food? No, they must have.
No, but I found a way to parlay that into. You know, I had.
You get invited to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I don't. You know, yeah. I'm not really a party kind of a.
No.
But, you know, it's like you've seen one pregnant slut sucking off an elephant. You've seen them all. Did you find that to be true? Are you?
You know, I'm going to have to dream about that. I'm going to meditate.
You're still on the cotton balls. That,
I believe I've seen some dog action, film. But
I don't know if I can handle this.
I'm just a hoaxing kind of a gal.
Please.
Yeah, I'm more of a could be rough. Before we let you go, let's bring it back to writing just for a minute. Anything?
I want to talk about my birthday, what I did on my birthday.
All right, well, talk about your birthday, and then we'll bring it back to writing.
Okay.
All right, so
happy
birthday.
Would you like to ask me
happy
about
birthday.
My birthday?
So how old are you, and is it proper to ask such a question? And
it's how many fingers old, as they would say in K-5.
How are you celebrating? How long are you celebrating for?
I'm a 41-year-old soccer mom.
Right on.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kind of referencing the popular, you know. It's funny, people know me as like soccer mom. I think some articles kind of referred to me sort of like that.
Right.
But nothing against soccer moms. My son doesn't play soccer. But
he'd be allowed to though if he did.
Yeah, I think so. Hmm. He runs fast. He kicks balls pretty hard.
I'll bet he does.
The apple doesn't fall far from the gosh darn tree.
All right. Well, speaking of kicking balls.
So, I wrote about Paris, and we went to the Four Seasons, and it was just like, we go in there, and the food is massively expensive in there, and we went out to bring in a pizza. And we thought, we come in with this pizza, and they're like, oh, no. And we're just like, oh, great. You know, of course, they spot us as a slime, you know, as a pond scum. They're going to take our pizza away, because, of course, you can't bring in food, like bringing in food to a movie. And it's
right.
Like, no, it is, you can't come in the front door with a pizza. It's like, of course. But what they did is they took it, and then they brought it up through the back way, but they had it on their gilded tray. They had it, like, I mean, I don't
think... The most cosseted pizza ever.
I think this pizza gave itself a hard-on. It was just... it was like amazing. But anyway, the service there... Yeah, exactly. But the service there was very similar to the 3 degrees. I mean, it really amazed me how, like, how warm people were. And just... and I really think this place deserves support. It's not just I'm not just stooping for this place. It really was special in that this woman and is doing amazing things with food over there in Tiburon, and people should make it as a destination. I think the only reason why you haven't read about it is because of her age, and because her gender.
All right. Well, I do hope people will look it up. I want to thank Laura Albert for coming in and celebrating her birthday with us. Mm-hmm. And
happy birthday.
Happy birthday, and people will be listening to this over Thanksgiving, and maybe they'll be thinking about food in their own peculiar way.
You think?
And I want to remind you, or not remind you, but to let you know that the next week we will have Adam Gorightly returning, and he will be talking about Discordianism. See you then. Bye.
Love is the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?